In 2010, the parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change set out three forms of human mobility that could arise as a result of the adverse effects of climate change. The first they designated was migration, and by that they generally were talking about movements that were in anticipation of worsening conditions ahead because of climate change. The second type of mobility was displacement. These are reactive movements that occur because usually of acute natural hazards that are also related to climate change, in that those hazards such as cyclones or floods have become more intense and more frequent as a result of climate change. Then the third form of mobility was planned relocation. These would be situations in which whole communities will no longer be able to remain where they are and will need help from governments and other agencies in order to be able to find land elsewhere, relocate to those new places, and be able to integrate into a new society. You notice that the term that was not used was a climate refugee. That's because the vast majority of those who will be adversely affected by climate change and move as a result of that will not qualify as refugees by the standards set in the UN Convention relating to the status of refugees. That convention applies only to those who have a well-founded fear of persecution based on a protected characteristic, their race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. Now, this isn't to say that there won't be some people affected by climate change who could not also claim that they had a well-founded fear of persecution. For example, there may be groups that the government just won't protect from the harms of climate change. For example, who won't allow assistance to reach them when there are cyclones or floods. But these will probably be a much smaller number of people than those who are migrating in anticipation of worsening conditions, or people being displaced because of the natural hazards that have struck their communities. They don't have a fear of persecution, but they certainly have a fear of losing their lives as a result of these processes. Now, there are a number of regions, countries, territories that are expected to have a much higher level of displacement due to climate change than other places. It looks, given the numbers of people already displaced by cyclones and other natural hazards, that Asia will be much more affected than most other regions. Bangladesh, because of its long coastline and the fact that there is already coastal erosion and many cyclones are already hitting the country with great devastation, is expected to be one of the hot spots. There are also places in Africa that are hot spots. And these places have almost the opposite impact of climate change on their lives. These are places where there's been increased drought, and sometimes those droughts occur in places where there's also a threat of conflict and terrorism. And so a good example of that would be what occurred in Somalia in 2011 and before and after that date, but particularly in 2011, hundreds of thousands of Somalis fled the country to Kenya and to Ethiopia, largely because the terrorist group Al-Shabaab prevented aid from getting to them, and Somalia fell into a famine situation, and people's lives were at risk because of that. Central America is another place where the effects of climate change may lead to large-scale displacement. We're again already seeing that the climate change is playing a role, although not necessarily the dominant role, in the movements that are coming from Central America through Mexico to the U.S. border. Violence and repression are still the major causes of movements from those countries, but climate change is certainly exacerbating the situation. Various UN organizations, many civil society groups, and some governments are trying to figure out how to deal with what is likely to be a growing number of climate migrants and climate displaced persons, as well as increased need for planned relocation. The UN Framework Convention on Climate Change is the convention that governs the responses to climate change for both mitigation of the causes of climate change and adaptation to its adverse impacts. And at the Paris Accords, where the world adopted standards to be met to reduce the threat of climate change, the parties to the convention also formed a task force on disaster displacement to come up with recommendations to help guide governments in how to respond to what are likely to be increased numbers of displaced persons. Now, the majority of people who are going to be moving as a result of climate change are going to be moving internally. All of the evidence points to that. That's true for refugees. It's true for other people, that there are far more people moving internally than internationally. Many of the movements that are likely to be cross-border will be into an immediate neighbor or wealthier country within a particular region that has more resources available for helping people adapt to climate change. Those countries certainly will need a lot of help in addressing the new movements coming across their borders. And sometimes those movements will be, for example, from Bangladesh into India and into places which are themselves hotspots at risk for damage because of climate change. We think far fewer people will be likely to move long distance. Number one, they don't have the resources to get to Europe or to North America or Australia. And secondly, because people do tend to try to stay home as much as they can. And if they do move, they move as close to home as they can possibly still be safe. As a result of that, there's a lot of thinking about adaptation to climate change that involves different forms of human mobility. First of all, there's a focus on how to help people adjust in place to the negative effects, thinking through what can be done to make communities more resilient and better able to reduce their risks from disasters. So that may be putting a better roof on their homes, using different building materials. It can also be things related to agriculture, drought-resistant seeds and new farming techniques, irrigation schemes that, or deep wells that help farmers still have some water even during drought periods. New fishing mechanisms to allow people to fish for different fish if the fish that they've always caught have moved north because the waters are warming. So this is adaptation in place to help people remain where they are. There's increasing interest, though, in also looking at migration itself as an adaptation strategy. We know people for millennia have moved when they are faced with drought or flooding or increased loss of livelihoods because of environmental change. People today are no different than people have been forever. And so what we're trying to do is think through what are the best strategies for people to be able to move in a safe, legal, orderly manner, and to places where they can regain livelihoods, where the population of those communities welcome them and rather than fight them, and where they can perhaps send money back to their family and friends still at home to either help them adapt in place or move safely themselves. And so this is a different way of thinking about migration, that it's not just a harm and a bad thing that happens to people, but it also potentially may itself be life-saving and help people have a much better life. But of course, this will only take place if there are pathways for safe, regular, orderly means of moving from one location to another. And that can be internal migration. Could be where people go in terms of small towns or cities, or to other rural areas, or it can be cross-border movements to places of safety. There's a lot of interest in this taking place, certainly in Australia and New Zealand, because of the small island states that are facing rising sea levels and the potential for actually losing their habitat, and certainly losing livelihoods as the water seeps into the land. So what should the U.S. be doing right now? Well, one of the most important things that the United States can do is lead by example. That means, first of all, increasing our efforts to mitigate the impacts of climate change to reduce global warming. Second, it is to think about what we can do for our communities within the U.S. Facing the possibility of displacement or the need for planned relocation, and find much better approaches to deal with those situations, either by helping people again adapt in place or move safely. We want to try to avoid displacement because it's reactive rather than anticipatory and safer for the people involved. We can also increase the aid that we're giving to other countries to help them in this planning process. We should certainly, as is occurring, rejoin the UNFCCC, UN Framework Convention on Climate Change discussions, the Paris Accord, and the subsequent agreements that have been made of how to implement the Paris Agreement. And we can use our own immigration policies, things like temporary protected status, more effectively as a vehicle for helping people who are temporarily displaced find some time, but get some help to return when it's time to return home, or adjust to permanent residence in the United States if it becomes clear that they're never going to be able to return to their home countries. And then what can JRS USA do? Well, we can educate people more and more on just what's happening. A lot of people are fearful of even talking about migration and displacement in the context of climate change. They either think it's too political an issue or it's too daunting an issue. In fact, some of the research that's been coming out projecting the numbers of people who are likely to move because of climate change are showing that these numbers are manageable. Yes, they're in the hundreds of millions, but we already have hundreds of millions of people migrating. And if we do the right planning, if we help the countries of origin prepare for internal movements, and if we reduce the likelihood that people are going to be displaced, then we can manage these processes. And in fact, a report called Groundswell, put out the world out by the World Bank, showed that increases in both mitigation of climate change and increases in development assistance for countries can reduce very significantly the numbers who are likely to need to move and must relocate because of climate change. So the JRS can do advocacy on this issue. It can also start to develop programs to help people who are stuck in this situation. In fact, one of the things that I fear the most is not that people will move, it's that they'll be trapped in place without the ability to cope with the changing situation, and will, of course, be most at risk because they can't get out of harm's way. This is a population that JRS is very close to in terms of its mission, and one that I think that JRS could be seeing as a potential service opportunity for the organization, because those people will need help in either staying safely or in moving in a safe way.